A couple of months ago, I saw a video on the BBC News website. You may have seen it as well. It was of a fire engine. It was in St. Petersburg in Russia, and it was a fire engine trying to get through some traffic or through some streets to get to a fire to put out. Now, clearly in St. Petersburg, they have the same problem as we do in the UK, because it was one of those housing estates where clearly they hadn't really made the roads wide enough, and they hadn't really made enough parking spaces for the number of cars around. So what had happened was that there were cars parked on either side of the roads, and the fire engine couldn't get through. But as the video went on, what happened was that people started to gather. People started to come together and work on this one car that was in the way. They started to bounce the car up and down, particularly the back end of it. And as the tires were lifting off the road, they were able to shimmy it along a little bit at a time. As each person did their bit, each person had a role to play, each person was bouncing that car, and the car was moved out of the way so that the fire truck could get through. I wonder if you've ever had a similar experience, probably not bouncing a car out of the way for a fire engine, but have you ever been part of a team where everyone was doing their bit to get a task done, to get a job done? I wonder whether you feel like your church family is a bit like that, whether you feel part of the team, whether you feel that you've got a role to play, a job to do, something to do for the church family to get the job done. Or do you feel on the fringe? Do you feel that actually you don't have a place in the church family? You don't have a role to play. You don't have a job to do. Well, I'm hoping that as we look at Nehemiah 3 this morning, that God will speak into that situation and show us that actually each one of us, if we are a Christian, we've got a role to play. We've got something to do for the church family. And we're going to see that from Nehemiah chapter 3. I'd really encourage you to have the passage open in front of you. I'm going to refer down to different verses, so it'd be great if you could look at it. I am working from the NIV. I noticed that Mark was reading from a different translation, but hopefully you'll understand where there are slight differences, that the point I'm trying to get across. So as you turn to it, let me fill in some of the context. Mark's already helpfully done that a little bit. The year's about 445 BC, so we're talking 2,500 years ago now. We're at Jerusalem, but we're at Jerusalem after a period of history where the people of God, they'd not been listening to God's warnings to them. God had promised that if they didn't live as his people, that he was going to kick them out of Jerusalem, kick them out of the country that he had given them, and they'd go into exile. And God's people hadn't listened to these warnings. They'd kept on living their way. So God kept his promise, and he did throw them out of the country. And they've been away in a different country, in Babylon, for 70 years or so. But God had also promised that he would bring some of those people back one day. And that started to happen. So we're in a really exciting time of the history of Israel. Some people have come back, and the temple's been rebuilt. This is my mock-up of Jerusalem that my son's helped me build this morning. So they've come back to Jerusalem. They've built the temple in the city with under Ezra's leadership. But the walls are still in ruin. They're still in ruin from when the Babylonians came and destroyed Jerusalem. And so God had laid it on the heart of Nehemiah, this guy who was pretty high up in the Babylonian Empire serving the king. God had laid it on his heart to travel back to Jerusalem and to bring some people with him and to encourage and lead the people in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And he's got royal approval to do so. He's got royal backing. Look down at chapter 2, verse 8 with me. Because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my requests. So we're back in Jerusalem, and we've got this chapter. Well, let's be honest, Mark did a fantastic job of reading it, but it is a long list of names that are hard to pronounce, sections of the wall, and different gates that are being built as well. And you might think, what on earth? What on earth has that got to teach us in Clydach and in London 2,500 years later? Well, what I want to hope that I can show you this morning, that it's got something wonderful to tell us about the church, because this is all about God's building business. Chapter 3 of Nehemiah is all about God's building business. And what the one thing I'd love for us to take away from this today is that we are to build our bit. in God's building business, to build our bit in God's building business. Why do I say that? Well, God wanted Nehemiah to lead the people to do this work. It was his work. Let me try and show you that from chapter 2 a few times. So verse 8 again, because the gracious hand of my God was on me. This was God's doing. Verse 18, I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me again. And then verse 20, the God of heaven will give us success. This rebuilding of the wall wasn't just Nehemiah's kind of frolic. This was God's work. This was God's building business. And God's got a building business today as well. It's not building the walls of Jerusalem, but it's building something else. I want to try and show you that from the New Testament. We're going to end up in Ephesians chapter 2. So maybe you want to turn to Ephesians chapter 2 now and look at those verses. But as you turn to it, let me fill in some other verses as well, because in 1 Corinthians 3 verse 9, the Corinthians are described as God's building. We get it in 1 Peter 2 as well, where the Christians are being built up into a spiritual house. In Hebrews 3:3 again, we get Jesus compared as a builder of a house. And then we have in Ephesians 2, where it's clearest, I think, from verse 19, let me read from 19 to 22. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people, and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. So back then, God's people were building the walls. That's what God's building project was, rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. But today, God's building business is building his church. Tim Keller, the pastor in New York, in Manhattan, he says this: they were building a temporary city with a physical wall. We are building the ultimate eternal city through conversion. They were building a temporary city with a physical wall. We are building the eternal, ultimate eternal city through conversion. So as we read through and work through this chapter, I think we're going to read and see Nehemiah and the Jews working on the walls of Jerusalem and see it as a picture of God's building business, of him building the church and using his people, ordinary Christians, to do that building work. And as I said, the one thing I'd love for us to get is to build your bit in God's building business, or build a bit in God's building business. Why do I say that, all bit? Well, it comes across even better in Mark's translation, actually. There's just this relentless kind of next to him, next to him, next to him bit, isn't there? So verse 2, we have next to them. Verse 4, next to him. Verse 4, the next section. Verse 16, beyond him. And then verse 23, beyond them. There's just this wonderful picture of loads of different people all around the circumference of Jerusalem, all building their bit of the section, all building their gate or their wall, or building it from scratch, building up the walls of Jerusalem. I'm not sure if any of you have been involved in camps ministry. Well, I know that some people have been from the church family, have been kind of leaders or officers on camp. I think we see a wonderful picture of what I'm trying to get at. In camps ministry, we have lots of different people on a team, lots of different roles, but they all do their bit. You've got the camp leader who's overall responsible for the week. They organize and plan the program, they run the days, they've got safeguarding responsibilities. But then you've got the ladies leader, also part of the overall leadership team, but also takes roles in kind of the more practical side of things, in organizing the children to go into dorms and into teams, and organizing the washing up rota, which I'm sure everyone despises each year. You've got the leader, the ladies leader, you've got the chaplain who's there to preach, to prepare the Bible studies, to answer the questions of the children. Then you've got the grafters, you've got the officers who do the hard work, getting alongside the young people on the camp, running the Bible studies with them, caring for their needs. You've got junior officers who are learning the ropes. They've got their part to play as well. And then, of course, you've got the most important people on the team. You've got the cooks who put the food on the table so that you can survive for the week with some wonderful foods. All these different people, all with different roles to play, but they are doing their bit so that camp's ministry can run. And what we see in Nehemiah 3 is that all the people, all these different kinds of people, are doing their bit so the walls can be built. A picture of all doing our bit in the church family to build God's building business. And that's the one thing I would love for you to take at home today. But what I'm going to spend the rest of our time doing is kind of drilling down into the details of that a little bit more. I want to focus, first of all, on the all aspect of it. All build their bit in God's building business. I'm hoping this is going to be a bit of interaction. I forgot to warn Mark about this. I'm hoping that you're able to unmute people so that people can shout out. Because I want you to just quickly look down at some of the verses. First of all, verse 1 and verse 28. Can you see different types? Who's been described in verse 1 and verse 28, kind of in terms of a type of a person, maybe their kind of job? Can you see him? And then maybe shout it out. Any takers? Eliashib, what was he?
High priest.
He was a high priest, yeah. And can you see in verse 28 as well? Who comes up in verse 28? Hey. The priests again. Yes, yeah, so the religious leaders. What about verse 17 and 18? Who's mentioned in verse 17 and 18? As an overall, rather than specific names, kind of what was their job? What are they called? The Levites, thank you. Yeah, thank you for shouting it out. And then, so here's quite a few verses. So maybe pick one or two and have a look at, and then see if you can draw it together. So, certain type of people come up in verse 9, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. 9, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. What kind of rulers? Yeah, great. I'm loving the enthusiasm. Thank you. What about verse 12? Someone's mentioned in verse 12. They're not rulers. Daughters, yes, we've got families involved here as well. What about verse 8 and verse 31?
Traders.
Yes. Yeah. So we've got, I know where you're coming from now. You're coming from the sheet I've sent you, haven't you? So yeah, there's perfume makers, there's goldsmiths that I've termed as traders. They're work people. And then finally in verse 26, who's mentioned in verse 26? I didn't quite catch that.
Servants,
yeah, the temple servants. Thank you, Mark. You can mute everyone back now. So we've got loads of different type of people. We've got religious leaders with the priests. We've got Levites who are responsible for more the practical running of the temple. We've got rulers, civic rulers, it would seem, of different districts in Jerusalem beyond. We've got families involved with Shalom and his daughters. We've got traders, works people. Or we've got temple servants. All different types of people. There's a great diversity in the people that are involved in this work. I went to university in Bristol, and whilst I was there, I was at a church called Kensington Baptist Church. And Kensington is in an area of Bristol called Easton. It's quite a deprived area. It's where a lot of asylum seekers are placed by the local authority. What was really wonderful about Kensington was that the church reflected the diversity of the area that it was in. So there were quite a few Iranians there that were living in the area, and they came along to the church. There were some Roma there as well. One of the pastors at the time was a Nigerian. There were loads of different people from different nations, but not just nations. There were different ethnicities there. There were different languages. There were quite a few Welsh people there, being quite close to the border. So there were people I was able to speak Welsh with, even though I was in England. But different nations, different ethnicities, different languages, but also different jobs. There were people there who were office workers, who were administrators, who were lawyers or doctors or students or people who didn't have jobs. There was a wonderful diversity in the people that were part of the church, and all of them were doing their bit, were building their bit as part of God's building business. Why did Jesus die? Why did he die? He died to bring a people for himself from loads of different backgrounds, to bring them into God's building business. Isn't that amazing? When he was there dying on the cross, he was working to bring people together from all different backgrounds into one work, into one role in building the church. And if you're a Christian this morning, you are part of that work. You are part of God's building business because Jesus died for you and he has won you into that building business. Well, if you're not a Christian this morning, you're not yet part of that building business. But now Jesus has done everything that's necessary for you to be part of the building business. Do you know what he does? He commands you to pick up your shovel and get involved, to be part of that building business, to come to him, to acknowledge, to recognize that you're wrongdoing before him, to say sorry to him for those things you've done wrong, but then to pick up your shovel and to get involved in God's building business. So the question is, will you? Will you get involved in God's building business? No matter who you are, no matter where you've come from, no matter what ethnicity or language or job you've got or no job, will you answer God's commands to be involved in his building business? So we've seen something about the diversity of the people involved, but two more things. We see the dedication of some. Look at verse 13. The valley gate was repaired by Hanun and the residents of Zanoah. Zanoah was about 13 miles away from Jerusalem. So these guys were traveling in to do the work at Jerusalem. What about verse 20? Baruch, son of Zabai, zealously repaired another section. So Nehemiah's decided to put this in, that there's one guy in particular who was really zealous, was really enthusiastic about the work that he was doing. Back to verse 12, we mentioned him earlier, Shalom, who repaired the next section with the help of his daughters. Why is Nehemiah recorded the fact that there are daughters? Well, presumably because everyone else had sons. Everyone else had sons to help. And Shalom, instead of saying, oh, I'm not going to bother, everyone else has got sons, but I've only got daughters, so I'm not going to be involved in the work. No, he's dedicated to the work. He gets involved. He enlists his daughters in the work as well. Presumably they're willing to be part of it as well. They're dedicated to the work. And then I love this bit. Look at verse 5 and verse 27. We get a few of these mentions that there are some people who do a second bit. They finish their bit and then they go on and do a second bit. So verse 5, we see the men of Tekoa, or the Tekoites, I think, in the translation that was read. And then in verse 27, they come up again. Next to them, the men of Tekoa repaired another section. You see, there were people back here in Nehemiah that some of them were particularly dedicated to the work. I wonder if that's the case with your church family as well. But not only were some dedicated to the work, there was also a denial. Go back to verse 5 with me. So the next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa, but their nobles would not put their shoulders to the work under their supervisors. So we're not sure why these nobles didn't want to be involved in the work, but they denied it. They didn't want to be involved. It might have been pride. They might have thought, well, we're nobles and this work of building the walls, it's kind of beneath us. We're not going to be involved in that. Or maybe it was they had a personality problem with Nehemiah. He was the new kid on the block. He was the ruler that had come from far away and was getting things going in Jerusalem. And well, they didn't like that because they were the nobles. They're the ones that were normally ruling. We're not quite sure. But I wonder what's stopping you being involved in God's building business? What's stopping you building your bit? Is it pride? Is it things that you think are beneath you, that certain tasks in the life of the church family that you think you're too good for? Or do you have a personality problem with some in the church, some of the leaders or others in the church, and you say, no, I'm not going to be involved. Everyone else can do it, but I'm not going to. I wonder what would have happened in Nehemiah's day if people refused to do the work. I think one of two things, there would have been a gap in the wall. And that would have exposed the city to danger of enemies. or more likely, someone else would have had to have done your bit. After they'd built their bit, their section, their gate, they then would have had to have worked harder, done more to do your bit. I wonder if there are aspects of service in your church family that you're not doing, and actually some of your brothers and sisters therefore have to do it for you. We're meant to love our brothers and sisters. We're meant to build our bit as part of God's building business. And if we don't, well, it's our brothers and sisters that often have to pick up the slack. But you might still have a question of how. I get the idea that we're meant to build our bit as part of God's building business, but how? How do we do that? Well, for that, we need to turn back to Ephesians, actually. Ephesians chapter 4, it'd be great if you could turn there now. I'm going to read a few verses, so verse 7 first. Paul says to the Ephesians, "But to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it." But to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it. What is that grace that is being mentioned? Well, look at the end of verse 8. He took many captives and gave gifts to his people. So Paul's saying that Christ, he has given gifts, he's given presents to each and every one of us in the church family, to each one. And then that works out in verse 16 in this wonderful picture. From him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. So Paul's saying that Christ has given gifts to each and every one of us. Every one of us has got at least one gift that God has given. And as each part does its work, as each person uses that gift, the whole body grows and builds itself up in love. I wonder how many different gifts you think are mentioned in the New Testament that Christ gives to his people. Have a think. And then come up with an educated guess. I'm sure you won't be able to come up with a whole list right now, but try and think of some of the gifts that we learn about in the New Testament, and then come up with a number, how many you think it is, and then call out Mark, if you wouldn't mind unmuting people again. See if we can get someone close to the number that I've got. How many different types of gifts do you think there are? Someone be brave.
25.
Any advances?
20.
20. One more guess. You know what? If you went in the middle, you'd be pretty spot on.
22.
Well done. I don't know if it's exactly 22, but I'm going to rely on Wayne Grudem, who's a theologian. And he says that there are 22 different types of gifts that Christ gives to his church. They include things like faith or encouragement or discernment or teaching or administration. 22 different types of gift. And each one of you, if you're a Christian, you've got at least one of those gifts. Tim Keller again, he says this. He says, there are no superfluous stones. There are no superfluous stones. There are no stones that are unneeded in God's building. Everyone's got a role to play. Everyone's got a gift to exercise. Everyone's got something to do in God's building business. So how are you going to build your bit? How are you going to use your gift? One more thought from Nehemiah chapter 3 then. And it's this, it's you can start where you are. So verse 10, have a look down at verse 10 again. Where does he start? Well, he made repairs opposite his house. What about verse 17? The ruler of the half district of Kala carried out repairs for his district. Verse 23, what do we see there? Made repairs in front of their house. Later in that verse, made repairs beside his house. A few more, we've got verse 28. The priest made repairs each in front of his own house. Verse 29, opposite his house. And then verse 30, opposite his living quarters. These guys weren't going far. They were just building right opposite their house. And I wonder whether us exercising our gifts, us doing our bit, means just starting where we are. Are there members of your church family within your own family, people that you live with, your nuclear family? Well, you can use the gifts that God has given you for their benefit. They're part of your church family. Maybe you're in a house share and you're living with other Christians. Well, we don't have to go far to use the gifts that God has given us for their benefit. I know you're in Firebreak at the moment, but I understand you can go out sometimes. You can have some interaction with people. Well, maybe there are people in your locality that live near you, your neighbours that are Christians that you can help build up. Or if not, part of building God's church is winning people for Jesus, is sharing the gospel with them. So as you are at the end of the garden where you can't go into people's houses, but you can still speak to them, perhaps there's opportunities to build God's building business there as well. But COVID won't last forever, and I'm sure we'll be able to meet together one day soon again. So how are we going to build our bit in those days as well? Well, maybe it is joining a children's or a youth ministry of some sort. Maybe the gift that God has given you is a particular ability to get alongside younger Christians, younger people, build them up in their faith. Maybe actually it's visiting the elderly, and God's given you a special way of getting alongside those later in life, helping them to keep on running the race, even as they near the finish line. Or maybe it's a way of sharing the gospel with those who are older. As they near their death, then you've got a particular ability to speak into their situation. Or maybe, and this can happen this week as well, maybe your gift is encouragement. And perhaps you building your bit as part of God's building business is simply writing someone a letter or cards, dropping them a text, giving them a call this week, finding out how they're doing, encouraging them to keep on running the race. Or maybe it is, perhaps exercising your gift, building your bit means giving up your job, moving into some sort of full-time Christian work, whether at home or abroad. Whatever it is, Nehemiah 3 teaches us that we need to build our bit in God's building business. And may he give us the strength and the power to do that.